Welcome to my Bob Thurman podcast. I'm so grateful some good friends enabled me to present them to you. If you enjoy them and find them useful, please think of becoming a member of Tibet House US to help preserve Tibetan culture. Tibet House is the Dalai Lama's cultural center in America. All best wishes. Have a great day.
This is episode 240. A Tibet House US Minla Online Conversation with Lavinia Currier.
Dear friend and a great environmentalist with us today. I read a wonderful thing that she wrote in a publication in Hawaii, for a publication in Hawaii, on her statement about Earth Day and what it means to her and what it means to all of us. And I thought it was so totally marvelous. So Lavinia Currier, she is a mom and she is a grandmom and she is a rancher. And she is a major environmentalist and philanthropist. And she's been trying to instruct me for years about the need for environmentalism. And I'm her tardy disciple on this topic. And so I was just delighted to have her join us today on this podcast with this based on this wonderful statement, which I have a copy here, which, you know, maybe we'll read a little bit. So how are you today, Lavinia, on this Earth Day, and how are you feeling?
I'm feeling well, and I'm feeling glad to be looking out on a beautiful landscape of the Southwest, which is wonderful.
Yes.
And I think we have an opportunity to do something now, so that makes me happy. I'm getting many messages from people who are desperately depressed.
Yes.
About statistics, and I know you like to give happiness to people and good news. So not that we're Pollyanna-ish, because the obstacles are tremendous, but there's some good possibility now to fundamentally change our approach to the way that we live. So
yes, that's absolutely right. It's true. Although there are many people will be desperately trying to prevent that from happening.
That's just the question, is when the pandemic releases us from our rooms, as you said, it sent us to our rooms, which is a wonderful way to think about it.
Yes.
That we got sent to our rooms, and when you get sent to your room, you're supposed to think about all the things that you've done or not done or what have you. So the question is, how do we come out of our rooms, and with what difference
Do
we operate?
Exactly. You know, as a Buddhist teacher, I get asked all the time, like, can we do something online to prevent depression? Mm-hmm. And I think we can, actually. We would find silver linings, you know. But how are you doing it? Because you have been so strong supporting environmentalists way back in the days of Thomas Berry and early people who were involved with it. I think when did you actually start, besides that? When you were in the seventh grade, in your paper, you mentioned being in the seventh grade at Earth Day in 1970, 50 years ago.
Yep, the first Earth Day. And even before that, I was the person in our family who said, it's all going to come to floods and animals are going to disappear and we're going to have floods and droughts. And everyone said I was an alarmist. And then, you know, of course, the Club of Rome came out with everything that's now happened in 1970, and their statistics, you know, now the book almost looks quaint. The graphs are, you know, these cute little graphs that just show the rising of CO2 levels, and everybody said these people were alarmists and that they shouldn't be allowed to publish.
Exactly.
And of course, we're the great procrastinators, and we put it off for 50 years, and now, unfortunately, the situation is so drastic that we have to do something.
Exactly. You know, actually in the same 70s, isn't it, that we've discovered, and Bill Kibben has writes about, many people now are aware, ExxonMobil also discovered it, you know, and their scientists, the oil industry, fossil fuel industry, they discovered this would happen, And then they're like the cigarette companies, they hid it from everybody. And they said, that's a crime of unimaginable magnitude that will have to be addressed at some stage, you know. Although
by the time you go after the oil companies, they've packed up and gone bankrupt and we have to clean up after them.
I think
you've studied more than anyone, Bob, how the tracks in the mine keep going and the tracks of these capitalists, you know, this is what they know how to do and they're going to keep doing it. And I don't think there's going to be a great change of heart. We have to make it happen.
Right. I agree. Although I don't, for some reason, but maybe this is where I'm still your bad student that I haven't quite followed. I'm not making capitalism the word, because I do think that we've seen communism and these things collapse even just as bad. Although, of course, they are really state capitalism. They're not communism, none of them. But I think there is a good side from Max Weber and everything to, you know, saving, which originally was capitalist. It was really Buddhist view of capitalism. It's originally based on generosity, you know, from previous life, in some cases in this life. And so it's sort of consuming less than you produce is the idea, you know, and therefore saving for the future. And that is a good thing. If that's the essence of it, that's a good thing. But piratical or predatory, laissez-faire capitalism that these people do, it's just crazy, you know. It's just they're self-destructive. So I don't like to use that word. That's why I love the Elizabeth Warren. She didn't saddle the progressive campaign with the term socialism, which in our country is so impossible because it's mixed with communism. Although it's perfectly good in Scandinavia, as Nina often tells me.
But I think if we look at it from the Earth standpoint, the Earth is the capital, the Earth is the body, the Earth is the mercy, whatever. So the capital is not a bad sense in the sense that the Earth contains all of our capital.
Yes.
But the problem is that the balance sheet has not included the Earth's contribution historically. So the Earth was just considered to be this mother that would give and give and give without ever seeking any kind of reciprocity or recompense or anything. And I think we can see that this is not working. The body is tired and sick and fed up with us. And therefore, we're going to have more and more floods and hurricanes and diseases. And we have to be at this point very sagacious. I love that concept of, instead of being heroic, although some of us can be heroes, but most of us need to be sagacious and do exactly the clever thing at this point, because it's going to take a lot of undoing.
Yes. Like what I love in your beautiful thing, you know, you say clear blue skies above cities, quiet enough for city dwellers to hear bird song in New York, Singapore, Paris. In India, people see the distant snow-covered Himalayas for the first time in their lives. That's true in many places. Asthma attacks plummet among children, especially among those who are in those people of color in those neighborhoods that are downwind from the most horrible polluting industries, as does violent crime in the streets. Without the interference of cruise ships, whales can hear each other sing. The COVID-19 virus, tragically killing almost 250,000 people worldwide, has sent us human beings to our rooms. And perhaps there we reflect upon the devastation we wreak upon the life systems of our planet each and every day. I just love that. I thought that was such a great way to greet the, you know, because that is the silver lining, isn't it? That everything is quiet and everybody's going, oh, it's terrible, but it's not terrible. It's great what it is. But anyway, I love this silver lining. This also shows, by the way, that if we make the changes we should make, which are right according to Greta, 10% a year for 10 years, a cutting of fossil fuel, and carbon, methane, and so forth, pollution, atmospheric pollution, then we'll be back on track to manage the catastrophe we've already made by the 1.5 degrees. So that's everybody goes like, oh, that's so unrealistic. Oh, no. And then they have the politicians tell you, 60, 70-year-old politicians tell you, yeah, we'll get there by 2050.
I know.
And they're going to get, their carbon is going to be underground or in the crematorium by 2050. And they know it, actually. Mm-hmm. And so, and they think they won't be there, therefore, which is, of course, my thing about it, but I won't get into it. But I think we need by 2030 this major stuff. And look how quickly it all happened. They had said, but they forced to shut it down and acting like it's a catastrophe. And it's hard for people with, you know, that 40% of Americans, I think, or 50, who don't have an extra $400 for an emergency, right? Those families, things, the inequality has become so extreme. It's, those people are just in a terrible condition, you know. And but you know, there then finally there might be something will trickle down to them through the corrupt special bills that have been, the Republicans have kept, you know, jimmying, putting little amendments and getting more tax cuts for themselves and their cronies and big industry, instead of getting it to the people who desperately need it. But maybe the next bill will be better. I hope so. I don't know.
But from the perspective of Earth Day, when this virus has shown us that we can tolerate no pollution in these communities of vulnerable people.
Yes.
Because Louisiana, it's not just Mardi Gras. They said it's Mardi Gras, but it's not Mardi Gras. It's an incredibly toxic environment.
Yes.
With fumes and now with the new plastics burning, incinerating plastics and so on. And
yes.
People's lungs are just filled with crap and their bodies are not healthy. And this has got to stop. This has got to stop. And so maybe the fear and the sort of transparency that's come about with the statistics of who is sick and where and how that correlates with poisoned environments really will be instructive. It should be.
Yes, absolutely. And how do we, in other words, what can we do then? What are the measures? You had in the back of your study, of your statement, which I think is so fabulous, and are there any parts you'd like to read, actually, yourself? I read a little bit at the beginning.
I'd love to read the last part, but in terms of the recommendations, which are really policy recommendations,
yes.
I said that the first thing we have to attend to is to preserve the three great forests. And, of course, any forest should be preserved, whether it's in Woodstock or in the Rocky Mountains or whatever. But the great lungs of the earth are the Amazon, the Central African rainforest, and the Indonesian rainforest.
Right.
And these places have to be preserved so that we can breathe, so that the earth can sequester the carbon, so that we have these wells of biodiversity, which are essential for fighting disease, among other things.
Yes.
But that was my first priority, is that we have to preserve these forest areas.
Yes, yes.
The second one is that we have to stop polluting, despoiling, and raping the oceans, because if the oceans die, if the life systems collapse in the ocean, we all die.
Yes.
It will have such a catastrophic effect on climate, and
the ocean
also sequesters carbon in
That's where the majority of it goes, right? They say.
Absolutely. And we're already seeing overfishing, we're seeing systems collapse, coral reefs bleaching. So this has really got to be attended to. And on Molokai, where I spend part of the year, we spend every Friday picking up plastics on the beach since Fukushima. And I think...
Really? From Fukushima?
Since Fukushima, we've been picking up massive amounts of plastics.
Yeah.
And I don't know if the currents changed or what happened. A lot of them are fishing, fishing nets and fishing equipment.
Yes.
But I just think, do we want our children and grandchildren to just be garbage pickers in order to not wade through it?
Absolutely not. Yes.
And these are pristine beaches. So imagine I walked on a beach in Haiti that was knee deep in plastic.
Knee deep
in plastic.
That's just incredible.
And they just wait for the tides to come up the rivers and just push all the garbage out into the sea. And the children can't swim and there are no fish. And so obviously the ocean is incredibly
absolutely important. You know, there's if you pick it all up, what would we do? Would we send big ships with sort of giant vacuum cleaner tubes that would vacuum it all up off the beach, and then we'd have this huge wad of plastic on that ship? Then what do we do with it is the thing. I don't know that. You know, what
some groups are making it into Puma, you know, sneaker bases and sandals and things like that. We can reuse plastic, but we have to stop making it. Plastic is oil.
Yes.
It's part of the oil industry. And since the oil industry has crashed, we've become Plastics Appalachia. All the old coal plants are now making plastics.
Yes.
From cheap tar sands oils. So we just have to stop making it.
I know. I read today in a history of straws in the Atlantic, the one that has Packer's article on how we're a failed state. The wonderful Atlantic that has turned to good purpose now. And it said that the Coke Industries has bought the big straw, plastic straw company. It was sending out all the plastic straws. So that's all totally tied in with their paying money to the Tea Party. And now they are paying for these people who are protesting to get out of lockdown in Michigan, in those Democratic.
Oh, I believe it.
They're totally paying. It's all a fake grassroots thing. That's not a real thing. It's completely fake. And that's known now. And I was not shocked, but there you go. They bought that, you know. So any desperate thing, they just so, as you said, routinized in their thing. They can't think of doing something else. You know, for years I've been telling people in the oil industry in Europe, where they at least will listen, but even though they don't do anything still or not enough, I've been telling them, why don't you guys get into the renewable industry while you still have some cash? And then you can flourish in that industry, you know, because this other industry is going down. And all then they do is they mumble about, well, all we know how to do is upstream. We only know about upstream. That's all they keep. They say that. And their own children and grandchildren are like calling them climate criminals. And they haven't woken up still. But I think they will now. They're going to at this point. But what do we do? That's wonderful. You know, then I was about the green lungs of the planet, you know, that you say, beginning with the great Amazon forest, Central African forest, and Indonesian rainforest. And actually, there's a big rainforest a little bit left in Assam, you know, in Arunachal Pradesh, and in some parts of Burma, although Chinese are cutting in North Burma badly, near where they're attacking the Rohingya people with getting the Burmese government to do that. So Burma's kind of gone, and China tries to invade Arunachal, and then they'll be cutting all the trees, you know, if they do. And so there was a rainforest in eastern Tibet when it used to be coming off the plateau, you know, that they badly cut. So there's one there that relates to the third pole that people should know about, I think.
But some of the monasteries are reforesting, aren't they? I read that.
Well, they are. And, you know, dear Mark Benioff has started this one tea with the
I saw that. That's great.
A trillion trees, but you know, on that same time in that Davos event where they launched that, Sadhguru, who you know, I'm not his biggest fan, but I like him, he's nice. But he did say something brilliant. He's planting them in India, and he said, people have to remember that this thing, like, we're going to plant 1 trillion trees, you don't plant trees, you plant saplings or seeds. And then the question is, how do you defend that seed for 10, 15, 20 years till it becomes a tree? And then it really starts the job of fixing carbon into the root systems and pulling leaves and things and pulling it out of the air. And so he had this idea that in India, what he does is he puts it as a cash crop for farmers. He says, if you plant in public lands, then people will go in and raid it for firewood because they're so desperately poor. And when it's even a little stick, you know, and it'll get destroyed, you know, it will be very, not so many of them will get through, you know. So that's really, but the trillion trees is a good thing, but it isn't enough. You're right. We have to stop doing it. We have to stop making the plastics right away. So how do we do that?
But the trees, what you said is very important. We have to care for them. And that's when young farmers come in, because we plant trees by the thousands on Molokai because we have feral animals and they've destroyed a lot of our upland forests.
Yes.
So we're planting trees all the time, but many of them get taken by animals or either the pigs or the deer, or they dry out or whatever. So the question of, you know, where do you get the manpower to care for those trees? And maybe that's where something like the Green New Deal comes in, that you really send labor forces of unemployed people to plant trees to do this work. But I guess what I'm against, and what upsets me picking up plastic, and I do it every week, but what upsets me is that this should not be the way that children spend their time. We should stop it at the source so that the fishermen or the agribusiness or whatever cannot spew all this plastic out.
Absolutely.
That we then send our school children. And I think there's been this sort of disinformation campaign on the part of the oil companies about recycling. They go into schools and they convince children to recycle when they know there's no recycling and it's all going in the rubbish. But it makes the plastic look good.
Yes. Right. You're right. Right.
So this kind of thing has to stop. So I think this period of reflection is good for all these reasons. So many people I know, myself included, who fly around in airplanes are thinking, do I really need to fly around in airplanes?
Yes.
Because we're habituated also. Our mind have those habit tracks, right?
I know. Greta Thunberg took a boat. She won't go on an airplane. She ruined her poor mother's operatic career by not allowing her to fly. And the mother was so selfless to do that and gave up her singing career, you know. Although I think instead she should also get a boat, get a sailboat. Like Greta's sailboat was, you know, that was given by the Monaco prince, you know.
Right, yeah.
He sailed her own.
Prince Albert.
That was very good of him. But she doesn't have her own sailboat. But she should lend the sailboat to her mom to go around so she could sing again, really. I don't know about that. Or we should get on trains or something like that. Mm. You know, next time I go to Los Angeles, maybe I'll try to get on a train. If I have more, I'm retired now, so I have more time. Maybe I can. You know, although now I'm being terribly busy with being online all the time to try to keep these nonprofits we're working on alive, you know. And actually, there's quite a lot you can do online, but then you get very busy doing it. So my concern then is how to get people to follow this up. You know, then Mark Hyman's book, you know, my last podcast, Hyman podcast.
Yes.
I don't know. I put mine out with him, but he has this great book, Food Fix. Have you looked at it? Did you see it?
You gave it to me last night, but I haven't had time to read it.
I see. Yeah, I also have he has a 4-page summary that I'll also send you. This makes it in case of time pressure, you know. And I was surprised, you know, when I went to Al Gore's training, which I hope he's going to do online now, and I'm going to definitely let you know.
Good.
And, because he had 4 or 5 trainings to be planned this year. And so they have a plan to try to do it online, and I haven't heard whether they haven't announced anything still. I get their daily announcements, and I haven't seen anything. But they should get busy about it, actually, and really do it. Somehow figure out how to do it online, and then they could do it for 100,000 people. I bet they'd get 100,000. We need this to go out now while people are thinking about it, you know. Mm. And I'm so grateful to you for coming on the podcast to talk.
No, I'm so grateful for being here. Anyway, it's great to see you, Bob.
It's great to see you, of course. But we don't have to fly in an airplane. We're just here, you know. But we must have. These things really out in front of people. And what I was surprised, Al had big meetings in Carthage, Tennessee, where he has his farm, and he's doing regenerative agriculture. And he had a lot of farmers from all over the Middle West there, and they were doing it. And he had a lot of like testimonials from farmers who used to do agribusiness type agriculture, which destroys the soil, doesn't add, you know, adds to the carbon pollution. It's a huge, that the bad food industry, including all elements of it, like the waste, 30% of the food is wasted, and then it's thrown in landfills, and then it emits methane and so forth. So it's that whole cycle of the industrial food cycle, the industrial, you know, killing fields for the animals, you know, what do you call it, industrial meat production and all that, is really horrible. And it's 30 to 40% of the carbon pollution is not the direct fossil fuel, it's indirect fossil fuel through the food industry. Mm-hmm. And so big ag and big food, that's what he shows how that happens and what is being done about it and how they prevent it being stopped by lobbying in Washington and how they do that and how they go and they write the farm bill, you know, $780 or $800 billion farm bill they write, and they get trillions of dollars in subsidy, more than the oil people do even. That's why I couldn't even believe that, but you'll see that in the book. It's amazing, actually. So they didn't emphasize it that much in the climate reality thing. They were more focused on the fossil fuel piece, you know. And But he's fully aware of it, Al Gore is. But in this new training, I hope they will mention that, because he has a great line, you know, that we can do something about the climate with our fork.
Yes. And of course, the fossil fuels that are used in farming are tremendous, not just the tractors, but all the nitrogen fertilizers and all the transport.
Exactly. And then you lose it. There's only 60 more harvests left, actually, in Iowa, according to that. And then we'll have a dust bowl there again, you know.
Yeah.
And we won't be able to grow that food. And they know it. And then he was telling me, Mark, because he talks to them, because he's a family doctor, you know. Mm-hmm. He talks to General Mills people. They probably go talk to him to figure out how to do greenwashing. Mm-hmm. And he says they seem to be aware that this apocalypse is looming over them, their food source. But then they still do in Washington everything they can to impede any progress done ahead of time, because they're just making so much money right now out of it, you see. So this is, you know, this is where we, how to do this, you know. Green New Deal, totally. But will Joe take those people aboard? This is the question. Will the DNC take them aboard?
Well, I think one positive thing with this confinement, let's call it, or sheltering at home, is so many people are starting to garden, and so many people are realizing how insecure their food situation really is.
Ah, yes, good.
So here's a good way to turn this huge ship around, which does have enormous lobbying.
Yes.
The stores that are thriving are the little nurseries and the mom and pop places and the farm stands and the CSAs.
Yes.
So this sort of thing that we thought was just the two coasts where elite people could have organic food and so on, I think is hitting home, because people are realizing, do I really know where my food is? Can I really keep getting it?
Yes.
Do I have to rely on Amazon and Bezos to deliver? Or can I go next door? Does somebody have a cow?
Yes.
And so this kind of
thing, really good, yes.
That might be a transformation that comes about now that's maybe easier than how we put to bed the oil industry, for example, which is a difficult thing with all the cleanups. But changing the food, I think the answer is you decentralize.
Yes.
And you have, even in the cities, you have rooftop gardens, you have victory gardens, you employ people to keep the soil open so that it can be used by the citizens. And that, I think, is not so hard.
You're sending me straight down to the garden. That's what we're trying to do. They're here, and try to get everyone off their screens, and we'll try to do that. That's a piece. You're guilting me all on that one. I should definitely do it.
You probably have groundhogs, not gophers. We have gophers.
That's what I mean, groundhogs. Yeah, I caught one last year, and I took him far away, but I think he came back.
Yeah, they come back.
Relatives are there.
But Bob, you brought up something important about eating. If everyone becomes a vegetarian, will help a lot.
Yes.
And we see that the slaughterhouses have caused so much disease now in this period. And I think that, again, maybe that's not easy for everybody, but certainly to eat less meat, to simplify everything.
Well, Mark's book, you'll see, I confess I was relieved, as I'm a little bit of being a pseudo-Tibetan. I'm slightly in Mongolia. I do eat meat, but although I feel guilty about it too, but I do eat it. And he made a big distinction between factory farmed meat and wild, you know, like grazing meat. He says the wild grazing one actually can be good for soil, and it restores range, and it like puts manure out in the range, et cetera. And so it's like, it's not as harmful. And if you're going to still have some people who will not go vegetarian, at least not have that horrible factory farm stuff, which is so awful.
Yeah.
So he's very moderate. He doesn't ask too much of us to get it done. If we propose everything as requiring some huge Herculean thing, then it leads to, well, it never will happen, you know. Mm. Like, for example, Amazon, I just wish I knew Bezos, which I don't. But he said he was going to put $10 billion toward mitigating climate change. But one great thing he could do for the people of color communities, who are the ones who are dying more because their underlying conditions are so huge, because they live in food deserts where all they have is Pizza Hut and McDonald's and these kind of places, and they have no grocery stores.
Yep.
Why can't he deliver why can't he deliver to them? And why can't Walmart put small units in those neighborhoods? Mm-hmm. And they would make money. They could still make money. Mm-hmm. They can't get to the big mall shop where they have Whole Foods, et cetera, or they have organic food too, Walmart, but they could put them in these very badly disadvantaged neighborhoods, and then they'd feel so much better about their own business. And they'd have a way of, it's like the oil people, why can't they start making panels and windmills? And, you know, they have cash now. Why are they putting it to find more oil that is not going to be able to be burned? You know? It's just so stupid of them.
I think it's a lack of imagination, frankly.
Yes, I agree. So someone has to get them thinking, you know. Mm-hmm. I was on a thing earlier today, an Earth Day thing from the Global Wellness Foundation or some whatever they are, you know. I didn't mean to really get on. Then I got to listen to this Swedish lady who works for Six Senses, which is a big luxury, like Aman, you know, all over the world. Mm-hmm. And they were talking about it's going to be great when we come out of this. And I didn't say a peep about one problem, which is all the airplane fares and all the airplane. You know, but they're all, otherwise they're talking mindfulness, green, everything. It's all very good, meditating. And then they were doing visualizations and letting people use their imagination to see the world as we'd like it to be. Mm. Like clean like this, but without everything shut down, but with the re-engaged activity being channeled into things that are not so destructive, you know, that are regenerative, you know.
People seeing even images in the press of how things have cleaned up, how the water in Venice has cleaned. I think that's inspiring to people.
So many
people think we're so polluted. It's been going on for so long. How are we ever going to turn this around?
Listen, that's so where
seeing after 5 weeks of immobility that the natural world really does come back is really encouraging. And I think that's a happy.
That's where you're. You know, declaration here, Earth Day declaration really grabbed me. Clear blue skies above cities.
Yeah. And I'm sure you've seen those wonderful pictures of the Himalayas from Punjab and from these choked cities. And people are looking out and they never knew they could see the mountains. They'd never seen them in their life.
I know. When you're up in those mountains and you look down at the plains, you can't see the plains either. You see this brown smog. It's really terrible, actually.
Yeah.
It really is terrible in India. And, you know, that's with Tibet House, you know,
Bob, your mic is, can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you really well.
I can't hear you.
You're kidding. Oh, no. What happened? Whoops. Really? Let's see. What happened? According to my input level from my mic, it's coming on strong.
Now I can hear you.
Now you can hear me?
I can.
Something happened.
Yeah. Perfect.
You know, these things happen. You know, the poor, Zoom people, you know, they used to have customers like 10 million people in a week. Now they have 200 million in a week because everybody's using it. But you know, businesses could have been using this all the time and having less airplane pollution, you know, less airplane flying. And they could, you can meet like this. It's just great. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm going to come back to you. I'm going to try to do, was this the kind of thing we're trying to set up at Menla, our low tech, we have nice, helpful semi-volunteer people, but we're going to have like a grandmother conference online sort of thing, you know? And, we'll get maybe some indigenous people and some others and then some regular. And then I think you're very indigenous. You're indigenous too. And so am I. We're both indigenous. But I'm a grandfather, you know, that maybe we can have a couple of grandpas in there, you know, where we will keep up. We have to keep helping people see this. I also feel that one of the major things why your declaration, I think, is so important. One of the major reasons that people don't do what they could do is that they think it's impossible.
Yeah.
They really think that the Exxon is here for till doomsday and that Charles Koch will be here forever. Mm-hmm. And they don't, unfortunately, not being clairvoyant, they haven't experienced, as I have, and I'm not out of clairvoyance, but out of fantasy or imagination. I have experienced since, I think, 3 or 4 months now, poor David Koch running down to the Chase Manhattan Bank and looking, seeing checks go through his account and saying, that's my check. I didn't sign that. His ghost, I mean, freaking out over all that effort he made to get that money. And where is it now, you know? Right? He died, I think, in February or something, you know?
He did.
Yeah. And his brother Charles is unrepentant and is doubling down, and he's not stopping these fake tea parties and these people ripping the country apart, you know. And it's really terrible. I love it too that you put return homelands to displaced indigenous people. You know about the Wampanoag?
Yes.
Isn't that terrible?
No.
They're making an excuse, the White House lunatic asylum. They're making an excuse of this time to sneakily go and grab the last 350 acres of the Wampanoag Nation, you know, in Massachusetts. Those are the people who welcomed the pilgrims.
I know.
And got murdered for it.
And I think just from an ecological standpoint, these people have stewarded these lands perfectly for thousands and thousands of years.
Yes.
And even the NGOs that I've worked with over the years do a less good job, and it costs, you know, 100 times more. So the obvious answer is to return these lands to the people who know them, who inhabit them, who are attached to them.
Of course.
And who are the best ecologists for those lands.
Of course. And for example, Tibetans don't like to be called indigenous because they have a literary culture, but they are the indigenous people of the Tibetan plateau, and they take care of it very well with their yak. And the yak is, they should return the land to the yaks, you know, definitely. And then they'll keep rebuilding the plain. You know, the grass has deteriorated in quality enormously since they took the yaks off, you know, the Chinese did.
Mm.
And they're ruining it, you know, and that's like ruining another North Pole, another Greenland, you know.
Well, when His Holiness was here once, I think at National Geographic, he asked that we do something on Tibet's rivers.
Yeah.
And he saw what happened in the newspapers most recently, the Mekong. So many of these rivers are drying up because the Chinese are diverting them and using them for industry.
Yes.
But His Holiness, people said, you know, people were talking about the yak and about the Tibetan antelope, which is endangered, and so many of the animals.
Yes.
And His Holiness said, yes, these are important and they concern me, but what really concerns me is the water. And everybody sort of froze because it was so obvious, but nobody had talked about it.
Well, it's a huge, yes.
And he said a fourth of the world's population depends on these rivers. And now we're seeing.
No question.
They're arriving almost empty at, you know, at the coasts.
They will. And if between monsoons, there's no meltwater, which you're looking at before 2030, none of this 2090, 2050, before 20, it's all going so fast, you know,
right.
Tipping points, you know. Then that means you have drought, except for a couple of months a year, in all of North India, Thailand, Burma, Cambodia, Laos, Vietnam, and China, because the rivers also Yangtze, and they come from China. So we're going to do that online, and we're going to prepare to do that. We're going to do that online. I'm going to find everybody. I swear, we're not going to stop. Now I don't, you know, I said I've escaped from the university.
Oh, good.
And I am mad at even their Earth Institute. They couldn't, Jeff Sachs is still sort of on the faculty, but he's really working independently.
Mm-hmm.
Because the university is all invested in materialism, and they still are, they don't, and religion department, where I was stuck, is still stuck in a corner and has really no influence on that campus. And the materialists are into the separation from nature. They're still stuck in that. The psychologists are. The psychologists don't even read Freud. All they do is neuroscientific. They're going to try to fix the brain, and they think that's good. And even they're separate from their own brains. They think the brain is external matter.
Bob, this is something I wanted to ask you about the virus, because you've studied so much of history and the history of the mind. In the Black Death, obviously half of Europe died, and it took a long time. The Catholic Church was basically underfunded, and half the priests died as well because they were ministering to the dead and the burying people and so on.
Right.
But it took 200 years before we came across Descartes and the Cartesian thought that nature was just a senseless machine that had no feeling, that had no meaning, that had... So that sort of... Do you think that during this virus, that we're going to turn against nature, that we're going to say we have to protect ourselves from these horrible things that are viruses that number more, they're more numerous than the stars? Or do you think we can embrace it somehow, that we see that we need nature in order to buffer, in order to mitigate the effect of this?
That's brilliant. That's so brilliant, Vinny. That's really brilliant thought. Mm. Well, you know, what do I think? You know, I think that obviously people will take it in both directions. Mm-hmm. And what is always happens here is that the people who are stuck in that paranoia are often, because the fear moves them faster than the people who feel connected. And then they will make more effort. They will occupy the messaging. They will dominate the culture because they're used to having dominated it. Mm-hmm. And so they will, and you know, the Catholic Church, I mean, it's a kind of paradox, because the Catholic Church, on the one hand, they considered certain things somewhat sacred, you know, about nature, you know, and it was Protestantism that really deepened the gulf between the human yep. and nature. Although the Catholic Church, unfortunately, still had the doctrine like animals have no soul, and God made the universe, you know, the world for the humans to get what they want out of it.
But not in the early church, I think the animals did have souls, and there was a doctrine of reincarnation also in the early church.
Yes, but that's when you say early, that's before the Catholic Church. That's before the Roman domination of Christianity. There's some amazing scholarship that I have recently gotten very involved in because of my fascination with Judaism lately, and about how the Roman distortion of Christianity was very, very extreme. Mm-hmm. And even the Book of Revelation, which these lunatics, the lunatic asylum friends, you know, where we're going to use up all of nature and there's no climate and it's going to be great and we're going to all go up and go to the beach in Alaska, you know, this kind of thing. And they are stuck in this thing that came in with the Romans. And there's even a very interesting little thing about it, which is that, you know, remember Bartholomew, the Orthodox Christians, they issued the statement, the Declaration of Patmos, 25 years ago. Remember Maria, your friend, and she helped them with that. And Bartholomew did that, saying that polluting the earth is a sin. But that's because they didn't buy Augustine's interpretation of the Book of Revelation, that it was that the New Jerusalem will be made in heaven and there'll be no sex and there'll be no bodies and there'll all be angels and all this. Because Augustine, as some people who were very libertine in their youth often will do, he became very anti the body, you know, when he became a big bishop and everything. So they didn't buy that Augustinian interpretation, and they considered the New Jerusalem is Jerusalem on earth, not messed up, cleaned up. So therefore they did that. And Francis, who I think is much more radical than people really realize, he even gave credit to Bartholomew in Laudato Si. I don't know if you happen to look at that. But in Laudato Si, he says, what I'm saying here, that the oil people are criminals and the polluters are criminals and they're bad, which is unearthly for the church to say. But he was doing that. He was following Bartholomew. He said, he's the one leading me in that direction. He gave credit to Bartholomew, because in Roman Catholicism, but then what the new layer of insight in that is that the Flavian emperors who invaded Israel in the Palestine in the, you know, second century and destroyed the temple and all this and did all kind of thing, in a way they kind of created it. They twisted even the nature of the Gospels even before Constantine's Council of Nicaea in 325, but even in the second century and the first century BC, CE or AD, they already were changing the mission of Christ and all of this. So yes, Christ is not teaching like this. Turn the other cheek and don't dig up a bunch of filthy oil and spread it over the olive grove. Yeah, he was saying that. But the Romans were back into manipulating it once they abused Christianity in that way. And therefore, Albert Schweitzer, remember, he said he didn't buy that one, that the animals have no souls. Remember Albert Schweitzer?
Absolutely.
He was very faithful to Christ, but he said he would never believe that Christ was into animals have no souls, never.
And I love the Father Thomas Berry's quote, The universe is not a collection of objects. It's a communion of subjects.
That's absolutely right.
And it's so
100% right.
You know, going back to the Buddhist
Vimalakirti Sutra.
Yeah.
It's an intersubjective mind field of living beings. And when Buddha says that, the beginning of that sutra, he doesn't mean my interconnected one, just human beings. All the animals, also all kinds of gods and spirits and even demons. It's, in other words, the place where all their minds can interact, you know. And all the matter is generated by this interaction of the beings, you know. That's the same statement. And that, but the thing is, my, you know, how are we going to get back into the messaging, you know? I tried to get Al Gore to ask some of his friends in Silicon Valley to really get the Climate Reality Project where they could really get, you know, remember he had a TV station for a while, TV, but he couldn't maintain it financially. Right. And he's a proud guy from Tennessee. I think he doesn't like fundraising, I noticed. Because when I was talking to him at the training in Minneapolis, in the private thing, you know, that we had together, I was saying, you know, I know you can get more funding to really be have this training going on all the time. Mm-hmm. And instead of the oil industry owning CNN and CBS and NBC with all their commercials about how green they are, instead of that, you could be out there buying commercials on all of these things. You could do that. Please, you know. And his staff were saying, yeah, great. And he would say, yeah, great. But he wasn't ready to go ask them, you know.
But I think to answer your question about how do we message, we have this army of Bernie supporters, which I'm not in, but Cora, my daughter, and her generation. And they don't want to stop just because Bernie's not the nominee.
They shouldn't.
It's not clear to them that they need to be behind Biden or not behind Biden.
Well,
but
no, they must be.
Of course, they have to. We have to defeat Trump. But what I'm saying is that there is all this energy and all this intelligence that got behind Bernie that is still there, and they're still going.
Yes.
And whether you like Bernie or whether you don't, you have to see that this movement is alive.
I love Bernie.
And they are the ones.
I would vote for Bernie in a split second, although I'm more favorable. I think, unfortunately, Bernie may be too old to have a sex change operation and fit Biden's definition of a woman vice president. Otherwise, he should be. We can't do that. And also, he is saddled. He has not denounced the word socialism in our cultural stream, as he should have. Yeah. You know, just said, I don't mean Maduro, and I don't mean Russia, and I don't mean China, even though I like the Russians, which we all do. But that's stupid. Those communist parties suck, and I don't mean that. I mean Scandinavia, Denmark, you know, good beer, you know, Sweden, pretty girls. Therefore, Elizabeth Warren, because she's the only one who really is out there to stop the lobbyists, who realizes the corruption there. As a senator, she's seen it. Oh, she sees it every day firsthand. Mm-hmm. And that she's the one who uses the word corruption about the politicians in the right way. And, you don't get elected under policy, no, but Biden is going to be Mr. Nice. And then Ocasio-Cortez, like Friedman said, she can be UN person or she can be Green New Deal special, a new job in the cabinet, or Jay Inslee can do that. In Jay Inslee's camp, you know, in his website, did you read his program ever in his website?
I did.
Notice what I noticed in there that I loved? Was he knows all about all the New Deal, the original New Deal offices in the Department of Interior and of Energy and all this, and they're all underfunded. They have one guy in one desk or nobody in one desk now. And he's supposed to put money back through those channels. So, for example, guarding the trees could be Public Works Administration that they use. You know, outside Menla in Woodstock, our hiking trails have stone steps when you walk up to go up to the mountain above the valley. They were put in by Roosevelt's people on a salary, you know, and that was Public Works Administration, you know. And artists get funded that way and so on. We need that right now, of course. That's what we need.
What the federal government has just done, what the Republicans have just done, is the great socialist gesture of all the funding. And we just have to keep it coming, and we have to put people back to work, and we have to make sure that they're working in things that are really positive and will lead us in a new direction.
Absolutely.
I'm not sure if we have to worry about Biden or Elizabeth or Bernie.
We have to get rid of the lunatics.
All the young people behind them that have this energy need to be seeded and fostered.
Totally. Well, you know, therefore the DNC should make their final peace with Bernie. Yeah. And they should have him calling shots and platform and getting out there and talking to these young people and getting them and also showing that they're going to put some people in positions of power to do things that they want done. If they just say yes, like Hillary did, and then they just ignore them and they appoint people who are just their pals, who are just quote unquote moderates, which means they're still partisan of the party of the part of the corruption. And because, but they're poor people. There's 538 congresspeople, and there's 50,000 lobbyists with bigger budgets, bigger salaries, more assistants, more staff, more computer programs, more graphics, more advertisements on the media. And they can't resist that. What can they possibly do?
Right.
If they resist it, they get like Bernie and they sit. And they don't get any bills passed, but they're able to call them out, but it doesn't stop them, you know. So that's what we need, you know. Anyway, that's what we got to do now. We've got to do that, and we'll do that in, as long as we're locked up here. We're going to do that with people who are in their room, to try to get them to think about all of this and get massive. You know, we're doing something this weekend with a guy called Jai Dave, who is a kind of Buddhist Sikh sort of guy. And he got 1,700 people in a dialogue that we had.
Wow.
But they like the chanting and the drumming and the stuff that they do, you know, because it's which is fine. KD can also do that kind of thing. And so we have to, these are also, some of them are those young people, you know. But I don't know how quite to move out of the sort of Asian-oriented niche. But I'm working on it, you know. I had a thing with Corinna Gore. We had a little thing here. She's down at Earth Institute of Columbia and at the Union Seminary. So I'm going to try to get her to get Al and to get some input into the training that they could do online.
I think they could.
Everything they did in Minnesota, you can do online, definitely.
Yeah.
And actually, I was going to do it today, and I will do that because I don't. If this is Earth Day, this is also Meepam's birthday. He was born on Earth.
Oh, happy birthday, Meepam.
I will tell him. He's not here with us. He's over at the other place, at Uma's Ranch. But he was born 8 years after your 12th grade. Oh, no, your 7th grade.
Oh, yeah.
Are you, by the way, that foundation of it was the year of the dog, 1970. You know, it's Uma's year.
I've never looked it up, no.
Are you the year of the dog, too?
No, I'm the year of the red rooster or the red bird.
Oh, you're a year before that. Yeah. Okay.
You're the but year. I think I mentioned in my essay that I had my dog at Earth Day, and we hung a sign on her that said, "Save our wildlife." my whole class at Burley, a lot of people marched and skipped school.
Oh, that's great. We have a Luna in Burley. She was in Burley, but she might move from it. She finds it a little bit difficult. A lot of Chinese there and people like that. A little too stiff for her, I think. She's too cool. She might move somewhere. We don't know. Anyway, she's doing homeschooling now, everybody. They're all shut down, I think, all of them. Everyone. So everyone is rethinking everything, thinking what to do.
Well, it's kind of like, for people like us, it's sort of like a meditation retreat, isn't it? And this is the fifth week.
It is. It's wonderful. wonderful. I wish, I'm only happy. I mean, I am happy as much as I can be. But I'm really happy when I'm editing Tsongkhapa's commentary on the Guhya Samaja. Mm-hmm. You cannot believe how amazing it is. Mm-hmm. And I just go into a different world there with that. It's just amazing, you know. And
you have time to do that.
Then I feel this real strong pull from Mother Earth that she wants, you know, she wants us to speak. And Greta is her oracle, you know, to me, in my view. She's like a Tibetan oracle, except she doesn't have the good outfit. We want to get her outfit. But she has her own beautiful body and fragile, beautiful body, like the fragile.
She has the virus, I heard.
Really?
She and her father have the virus.
She and her father?
Yeah, but I think they're getting better.
I hope she survives. I'm sure they will survive.
Yeah, she's strong.
But it's, you see, this thing about 400,000 have the antibodies. That means, you know, if we've been eating healthy food, if we've been a little bit vegetarian, more veggies, more fruit, not any fanatic thing, then we can resist it pretty much. But people who are given bad food all their lives, who are getting adult onset diabetes as teenagers, like the people of color, because that's all they see, the commercials. And it's just, you know, he chases in that book how Coca-Cola and Pepsi-Cola, etc., when the food stamps are issued at the beginning of the month, they up their commercials for soft drinks. And they have 12-ounce big bottles that you can buy with your food stamp. And then when people have gone at the hearings for the farm bill and tried to say, no, food stamps shouldn't be used for unhealthy things, they say, oh, that's healthy. The obesity just comes because they don't do exercise. That's really healthy. They're getting all kind of like carbohydrates. That's demonic. That's evil. We have to stop that.
Yeah, we have to.
And you know, it's not that far from people's consciousness. I was passing a Pepsi truck on 116th and Broadway, and they had their windows open in the spring, last spring. And there were two guys working there who were delivering crates, you know, and, you know, like that. And I said, oh, hey, you guys, I'm great. I see you're making the diabetes deliveries. And they looked so angry.
Well,
they really looked angry, and they were not amused. But that means the fact that they look angry rather than somebody crazy person and laughed. The fact that they are angry means they know, even like simple worker like that, they know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's just, you know, that's, and the only way of stopping that is changing the lobbying rules and stopping that corruption. You know, and
coming from the ground up with good food in those areas that don't have it.
From both directions. But the ground up people have to realize that no matter how many marches, they should continue with all the marches, but they should also push to see that from the top down, this is also happening.
Right. Yeah. You know, both sides. Both top, bottom, and all the sides.
Yes. Well, this is really wonderful. That's really wonderful. And this is the first of many such dialogues, and I'm just delighted. And again, I congratulate you. I guess people can go online and look at the Beat.
Civil Beat. Yeah.
What's it called?
Civil Beat.
Civil Beat from Hawaii. Yeah. That this Vinnie's thing with beautiful photographs is put, but her other things, return homelands to indigenous people, preserve enough habitat to ensure survival of all species in the brink of extinction. Yes, that's made me think of something that I feel. The coronavirus, when I see it, you know, all that picture people are showing, the coronavirus, I see that, you know, you can see it sort of karmically as the animals speaking back, the mass extinction that upsets Greta so much. You know, when she always says that, when she says, follow the science, but then she says, and the mass extinction, you know, you can tell she feels it in her body, you know, and so the bat, however it was extracted from the bat, or however horrible thing was done to that bat, somehow subliminally from it's connected to its mind and the mind of its microbiome, this thing merged out to speak back to these humans who are behaving like that.
And the pangolin is the other vector. And the pangolin is a wonderful little animal like an armadillo that is just ubiquitous in Africa. And the Bayaka pygmies subsist on them. And they're very easy to catch because you can run up and grab them. They're quite,
So aren't you upset you didn't have a pet pangolin to go along with pet woodchuck? I can see it in your face.
I had a raccoon at Harvard, which was great. I brought my raccoon.
That's really great. So you have here shut down wet markets, wildlife trade, factory farms, and transform agriculture to regenerate, not diminish life systems. uphold and enforce the laws that were enacted after Earth Day 1970 to protect us and ensure the health of our ecosystems. Clean Air, Clean Water, Marine Mammal Protection, Endangered Species Act, and Environmental Protection Agency. It's an amazing Nixon, who we used to think of as a bad guy. He started that.
Yeah.
And after the Earth Day.
But it was Rachel Carson and Silent Spring and all and sure. Stuart Udall and all the people that came before. Sure. And Nixon just kind of caught that wave and put his stamp, thank God, put his stamp on these laws.
And we have Bill McKibben now, and we have you, and we have other people who are writing these things. And but what the different now is the television and the internet dominated by money. So that these messages, you know, don't have enough exposure.
Right.
So, you know, we have to move it into those mediums.
Right.
There's no other way. We can't just talking. We cannot do it. Anyway, never mind. Renewed discussion of the Earth's carrying capacity for human population and replace the current economic growth model with one of reciprocity and true sustainability, which they're very kind of you as a member of the superior gender of the human beings, that you didn't mention all that reciprocity and sustainability and control of population all comes from educating and empowering women.
That's right.
Yeah. Worldwide. And cultural relativism should not be observed there, and cultures that completely suppress women and use them like breeding bags should be stopped. That must be stopped. And that must be, well, reasonably, of course, you know, I'm not talking about, you know, anything more horrible, but they really should be interacted with in a way of, as I told Jeff Sachs once, I said, you can't do it with the Earth Institute alone. You need a Heaven Institute.
Yeah.
You have to deal with God, you know, what God wants, what the goddess wants, what the Shekinah wants, you know. Mm-hmm. You have to work on people's minds as well as, you know, your cell phones in the villages, you know, et cetera, you know, mm-hmm. and your mosquito nets. That's all great. And you should do that as much as you are, but you should not exclude the other. But of course, he continued to exclude at Columbia. I tried to found a kind of activist Heaven Institute, I called it for just for short, but they wouldn't know, it wouldn't happen, and it didn't happen.
But you're right. You're right that we don't need to talk about population because we have the population we have, and we have to take care of those
exactly.
people.
And just educate women, and it goes shooting down.
Yeah,
it'll go down.
But on the other hand, we should not decry the emptying out of populated areas like the European always say, oh, it's terrible, our population's going down. This is not terrible. It's just that we need to have a healthy rural economy.
Yeah.
But we don't have to aspire to have a billion people in every continent.
Yeah. Well, it should be in the defense budgets of all the so-called developed countries to make a sensible livelihood along with the education of women in all the countries that are now streaming out refugees to get to Europe. In other words, if their economies were more diversified and developed and women were not abused in any way whatsoever in those countries, they'd be happily staying in their paradisal countries, which would be paradisal if they were put together. And the defense budget, there's this one piece of paper that I used to have, I do have still somewhere from the Quakers. It has little squares. It's one sheet, 8x11. It has little squares, which are, I think, a billion or 10 billion or some number. Mm-hmm. And what it is the combined defense budgets of all the countries on the planet. Mm-hmm. And then they show, then they take out some of the blocks and they have clean water for everybody on the planet. You know, enough food for everybody on the planet, enough education. And it doesn't begin to even fill. Mm-hmm. The page, do you know what I mean? With all the needed things that are done as things that are in defense, you know, high security, high priority defense things. Mm-hmm. But now if this virus helps us realize our interconnectedness, total interconnectedness, what a global thing is, a global economy is, then that's where we have to cut back and armies become Peace Corps. Type of things, you know, and then and the funding goes to make trees and to make rivers and to make this and that, you know, liberate, and to you pay Bolsonaro to go and live somewhere in a shooting range where he can go around and shoot people and things and have a great time. I mean, you know, dummies of people, and then you pay him to not let the forest be destroyed there, which is he's now doing because the big ag wants more soybeans and they want more corn, and which they're going to feed to animals in their agricultural farms. And so they're paying him to make more land like that, you know, to destroy the trees. That's so stupidly. You know?
Bolsonaro essentially said the only good Indian is a dead Indian. I mean, he really did say that they should have done what the U.S. did and killed their indigenous people. So
Listen, I ran into that in Argentina in 1965. I tried to make a Tibetan community there with one lama. I was sent when I was a monk. Mm-hmm. And the people at the Harvard Club in Argentina told me, we kill them all here. Like they have some in Brazil. If they want some, they have Japanese up there. They can take a few Tibetans. We don't want any of those Asiatic people with this kind of eyes down here. They told me that at that time already.
What year was that?
65. Mm. 1965. Mm. I was back in Argentina last fall. And they said, oh, have you ever been here type thing? How people ask you. And I said, yeah, I've been. Oh, when I was 55 years ago. I said, you really have a slow cycle. I said, yeah.
I know. Thinking even about having been an Earth Day 50 years ago makes me feel quite old.
I know. But you're not. You're young. We're all really young. Mm. And also, and this is, future life. All those oil executives, all those big ag people, big food people, polluters, Bolsonaros, they'll all be reborn. Bolsonaro will be born of an Indian mother in the Mato Grosso somewhere. Mm. He will. For sure, if he does this, if he keeps this up, that's where he will be born. May he come to his senses before that. Let's hope so.
What do we hope for David Koch? He'll be born as a solar panel.
David Koch, well, I think he may be tired of looking at his checkbook being depleted. And he might be thinking about, hopefully he's thinking about me and the Dalai Lama. Listen, it's not about me. You're the one celebrated. You made the great declaration this time. And may all your policy recommendations be enacted very soon. I swear that will happen. I see it, Psychics have told me. Mm. Next year is going to be so nice.
Oh,
finally,
good.
We'll start the century. We'll be going in the right way. We'll have Green New Deal going on. It'll be really great. And the world will follow that lead, Really will.
May that be so.
Yeah. Thank you so much for coming on.
The Bob Thurman Podcast is published by Tibet House US, Menla Retreat and Dewa Spa under a Creative Commons, no derivatives, non-commercial license. Please feel free to share on your favorite social media platforms. Hope you are staying happy, healthy, and safe during the quarantine. Tashi Dilek, and thanks for tuning in.